Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, and I will be your host today. Today, we're going to have a special session with our panelists because of all of the stuff going on out there with the crisis, the coronavirus, the new CARES Act. There's a lot of stuff going on, and rather than waiting for a guest to come on and do it all, we figured we'd just come on and talk to you about what's going on so that you didn't have to wait to hear it somewhere else. So for our panel today, we have Megan Gorman. How are you doing today, Megan?
I'm good. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing great. And we also have Miranda Marquette.
Hey, how's it going?
Going wonderful. I know everyone's hearing our happy, cheery voice and they're thinking, we don't really like them anymore.
Why I know, are they right? So cheery? Well, so I'm trying extra hard because I kid you not, we're recording this on a day when we have had a stay-at-home order in my state and it's this sort of rain mixed with snow thing coming down outside. And I cannot go out, you know, because part of the stay-at-home order, right, is you can go outside and walk around the block or whatever. You're just not supposed to like have contact with people. And so like, I can't even do that today because it's so gross outside. So I'm really not okay, you guys. No, I'm doing okay, but it's terribly frustrating, but we should all be social distancing, doing our part.
Yep. We're doing our part by socially distancing ourselves with Zoom on this podcast. So we're holding it up. And then we also have Barbara Friedberg. How are you doing today, Barb?
Hi, doing great. Just reporting here from my bunker in Northern California.
Yeah, I think New York and California have it the worst in terms of lockdowns. And I have I live in Boston and in the city, and we actually went and rented a house down in Cape Cod for the month of April because we figured, well, the schools are out for the month. And this is one of the things I want to talk about here is, you know, we're all in a crisis mode. Every day we hear more bad news. We don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know if it's going to get worse. We're afraid for our, you know, our lives, for the health issues. We've got kids working at home, you know, where they're home, you know, quote unquote homeschooling, which now I'm an experienced homeschool teacher. And I can put that in my resume. So you've got all these dynamics going on. And at the same time, we're supposed to hold it all together. And so, you know, what I really want to talk about today is how to turn crisis into opportunity, both from a mental standpoint, but also like how we can actually put practical uses into play here. So, you know, Miranda, you just went into, well, not lockdown yet. You're in a stay-at-home order. So how are you dealing with this crisis?
Mostly for the most part, I am fortunate enough that most of everything I'm dealing with is, kind of a stay the course situation where, you know, my dollar cost averaging is still doing its thing. My automatic dollar cost averaging is still doing the thing. Most of my clients are still giving me work. Some of the coverage has shifted to covering things related to coronavirus. So most of my clients are still giving me work. I have had a few kind of cut back a little bit, depending on where my clients are getting their income from, because, you know, some of that online publishing money has dried up a bit. And so there's kind of that happening. But for the most part, for me, it's really kind of been business as usual, other than I can't really go outside or have any place to go to kind of get a change of scene. But as far as money goes, mostly I've been fortunate enough to just kind of be able to stay the course so far. I do have a post on my website, MirandaMarquette.com. A lot of people sent me questions about what I'm doing right now. And so I did actually answer those in a big Q&A post, which, yeah, so I've been fortunate. So I haven't really done a lot of changing. Now, if things keep going in this if things keep going in this trajectory for another 2 or 3 months, then I might have to make some changes. But basically, for right now, I'm in a holding pattern, and I'm just sort of waiting to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, no, that's great, Miranda. And I think you touched on a few topics I want to talk about today, and we'll dig in more. Now, Megan, what about you? How are you kind of holding up here with the crisis?
Well, look, I think that anyone who is client facing is in the trenches of this, right? So my role in this is all of the work that we've done since the last crisis. How does it come into play? And how do we engage with clients in a way that doesn't scare them? Because sometimes when you call, it scares people, but also in a way that they feel supported and that they are making the right decisions during this time period. I also do tax returns. So my days are a bit off waking up on the West Coast and dealing with the markets. And then when the markets finally shut, going right back into tax returns, even though the date has been extended, particularly for California residents, we tend to be in refunds here due to rules that the FTB has on how California withholding works. So we are trying for clients who are in refunds to get their returns out the door so they can get their refund back.
Yeah, and that's, I don't know how you do it, Megan. You must have a double over there doing taxes and investing right now.
I have good people working for me. It's all about the team, right? So good. I'm very spoiled. But I think also on a more personal note, you know, as I'm walking clients through stuff, you know, you have to make sure that you're doing the right thing with your own personal finances. So I actually think that this has been a lot of good opportunity on a lot of fronts, but I know we're going to get into that in a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a lot of areas to cover here on this. Barb, what about you? How are you handling this crisis?
Well, like Miranda, I'm very fortunate in that my job is from home. Everything I do, with the exception of going to conferences and meetings, which have all been canceled, I do from home. I write, I consult, everything's done from home. So I'm very fortunate in that way. On the personal level, getting food is harder. We've been advised not to go out, so we're ordering food, and it's not even easy to get. We have to make a list. We have to get up at, 6 o'clock in the morning to put it in. Otherwise, we don't get a delivery slot. And now with Instacart and Amazon having some strikes, we're also struggling with taking care of my 103-year-old father-in-law who's across the country in New Jersey and trying to get him food. We're having a really tough time with that because we don't have anyone who can pick it up for him and deliveries are very sporadic. So on a personal note, work is okay, but there are some really major concerns that we have, particularly about my father-in-law. And my husband's in my lifestyle, we have taken an attitude of gratitude. So every bite we take, we appreciate. We are not overeating anymore because we don't know how the food supply chain will be working. And not to scare anyone, because I think in the end it's going to be fine. And so what if I can't get the brand of peanut butter that I typically buy and I have to get another brand? Who cares? But this is an unprecedented time and has caused, anxiety both for myself, my husband, my daughter, her fiance, my immediate and extended family. And just, it's an entirely new normal.
Yeah. And, I know Barb, your parents were Great Depression era parents as mine were. And, when you grow up with that mentality, you're always saving for a rainy day and, it's raining. I mean, we had, the way I'm looking at this is, this started to happen and, we'll get into the investing in a bit, but we were prepared on that side. But, when people are going through this, it's not just us. It's everyone. And, we talk about the five stages of grief, which is denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And right now we start at the denial phase where people thought, oh, this will just come back. This won't, we'll go back to school in a week. And, now we're looking at the end of May for schools and maybe the end of probably, schools, that'll be it. But, I've been talking to people and people are really angry right now about everything, just not specifically driven, just generally driven anger, just about things that probably they shouldn't be, like New York. They're saying, oh, these New Yorkers shouldn't be down in the Cape. What are they doing? We should kick them all out. Like, what are you talking about? Like, these people have homes here. Like, you can't kick them out of the Cape. Because we got a house down here for the month because we figured, all right, we live in the city. We're stuck in the city. And I have two young boys, and I cannot survive. My wife cannot survive in our condo with two young boys for 1 to however many months, 3, 4 months, not leaving our house. I mean, it just, in 2 weeks, it was too much. So we looked at it. We said, you know, this is an opportunity. Much to like what Barb said in Living Our Day with Gratitude. Like, we looked at it as saying, all right, here's our situation. What opportunity can we take out of this situation? We said, well, we've got a month or more where we have nothing to do, no obligations. You know, where would we want to go? Do we want to go down to the beach, which is kind of close to where we are? And there's really no one around, which makes it easy for social distancing. Or do we go up to the woods? Or, you know, we just decided to go somewhere and just said, you know, let's make this an adventure. Let's try to make this fun. You know, we have to homeschool our kids now, so I can put that on my resume, experienced homeschool teacher. But we decide, you know, maybe we just incorporate some of our other activities like the beach. Let's talk about, you know, the beach ecosystem or whatever it is, but come up with some other things to help them learn and make this exciting and interesting for them and make it an adventure. So it's not just sitting around being angry or depressed or reacting to the situation, but being proactive and getting out in front of it and saying, I'm going to do something about this. I'm not going to sit back and wait. I'm going to get out and actually take advantage of the situation and say, what can I do right now to help my community? What can I do right now to help other people that are struggling? And just looking at it that lens, instead of letting the situation, you know, direct you, you direct the situation. So that's the mindset that we've taken. And I think it's been really helpful for, you know, for us in our mental sanity. Because I think it's living off funny memes from other parents who were stuck at home with the situation is fun, but that doesn't really solve the problems that we all have.
Yeah. So, and I actually just real quick, as far as that goes, I do have a post on my website, because of course I do, but it's about how you can help. And so it's just a little overview of like how you can do good and how you can help and make a difference, even if you feel like your efforts are small. And I think that's an important thing that you point out there, is because a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, this is this big systemic problem and it feels so overwhelming, but there are things you can do. You can, you know, order, like Barb was saying, you can order in, you can order takeout and give the delivery driver a bigger tip. You can donate to a local food basket, because that's something I'm doing right now. I've been roped into the person who is in charge of baby formula and baby food at our local food basket is high risk and cannot go in to do her volunteer shift. So I am doing that. And it feels really tiny and small to be like, okay, 1 hour a day, I'm giving out baby formula. But for the baby that gets that baby formula, and for food baskets and food banks all over the country who are about to have a huge need, anything like, if you can send $50 to your local food bank, if you can spend an hour at your local food bank, that's a huge help.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you mentioning that, Miranda. It's sometimes it's the little things. And I want to start talking about the investments too, because this is an investment podcast. But, you know, it's the little things. Like 2 weeks ago, I was thinking about this. I was thinking, well, we're in a crisis. What is going to be helpful? And if you think about it, this is before the CARES Act came out. You know, we thought, well, all right, big businesses are going to get bailed out. They always do. Small businesses are going to get stuck, as they usually do. CARES Act actually helps in many ways. But the point is the small businesses are really struggling, because they don't have the resources to withstand 3 months of not getting any revenue. So, you know, how can you support your local businesses? Like you said, Miranda, like order takeout and give them a bigger tip. Or I've heard some people, what they do is, you know, they get a bunch of people together and say, hey, we're all going to get takeout from this one restaurant tonight. And then tomorrow night we do it at another restaurant. So basically you're doing the same things. You're just, you know, as a group support, you're helping out the local businesses so they can pay their employees and they can pay their rent and make sure that they're able to survive. Because if we're in lockdown for 3 or 4 months, these businesses aren't going to be around. And if you want to support your community, you need to help them. Instead of ordering from Amazon, order from your local hardware store. your local community stores, keep them in business. Even if you're paying a little bit more, you know, keep them in business. Amazon will be fine. Don't worry about them, but find ways to support your local community. So, Barb, what are your thoughts about investing? Because, I mean, obviously we're in a crisis mode. The market was down 35%, depending on when this comes out. It could be down anywhere from between 20 and 35% or more. So kind of how do you look at this in terms of the investing in a crisis?
I'm so glad you asked this, because for investors, and particularly I think about the guy or gal who started investing in 2009 and has seen an average of, you know, 13% return per year, and now all of a sudden is faced with a loss of 25% of their entire investment portfolio. And that can cause a lot of anxiety and distress. I've been through this 3 or 4 times, and what I have done personally is just yesterday, I devoted the day and I looked at my asset allocation. And that is the percentage that I have allocated to stocks and bonds, cash, alternative assets in different categories. And I looked at whether it's in line now. Is it the 60-40 mix that I originally wanted? And for those investors who were maybe a little more aggressive than they should have been, who thought, oh, I've got many, many years until retirement, so I've got 90% invested in stocks, and now have seen that portfolio drop 25% and are thinking, I can't handle this. I am in a panic. That's a wake-up call for you that your asset allocation was not appropriate for you. So step one, you want to reassess what your long-term asset allocation is going out further. I advise people, do not sell assets now, because you have to be right twice. You have to be right on the point you sell, and then you have to be right again when you get back into the markets. And many people that sell and they make their paper losses real, then have no idea when to get back in and will subsequently miss the best performing days going forward. So in most cases, if you don't have to, your best course of action is to look at your asset allocation as it is today. Determine if after the drop in stock prices, maybe you went from a 90% stock, 10% fixed to a 80 or 70% stock and a 30% fixed. Maybe that's more in line with what you are comfortable with going forward. If that's the case, then just stick with it. If your asset allocation, the percentage of stocks versus fixed assets and alternatives, has gotten away from your desired target, then rebalance. So if you really want 70% stock investments and now you have 60%, then buy 10% of your stock asset, stock funds or individual stocks, so that you get back to your 70% desired asset mix. That's a way to give you a cushion going forward. And I know this is, well, coulda, woulda, shoulda advice, but it's also a reminder that any money that you're going to need within the next 3 to 5 years should not be in the stock market, because this is an example of what can happen. Now, if you had money that you needed to live on in the stock market and it's gone down and you've got to sell, you've got to do what you've got to do, and that's okay. And just accept it and learn going forward. And my final piece of advice is you might want to think about a robo-advisor, because they do the rebalancing for you. And you can just invest in an automated investment advisor. I have an article about this actually on my website, Robo-Advisor Pros, how to learn how to handle a stock market crash from robo-advisors. I also posted it on my LinkedIn page as well. So that's about all I have to say for now. And if you're totally freaked out now, just realize this is going to pass. And the market, if it any, if the past several hundred years are any indication, will rebound in the future.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Barb. That's really important. Megan, what are your thoughts on the investing side?
Yeah, so I mean, I think a couple things here because, you know, I think when you've, one of the big things that I focus on when we get into challenging situations is mindset. And, you know, don't laugh, but I often try to think about when the odds are stacked against us in these challenging times, a lot about history and a lot about people like Winston Churchill. And I actually wrote an article for Forbes about this, on how to manage your portfolio like Winston Churchill during this crisis, which might seem like an odd thing to approach it that way. But I think we've got to feel that we are, you know, fighting the good fight, that we are taking the beachhead, and we're doing the things we're supposed to be doing when the times get tough. And so what I have found is with mindset is with my clients, it's about getting them to do the right things in this moment. And I talk a lot about what the high net worth group does, because I think people want to know, what are they doing during this crisis? And I can tell you that my clients are in two main groups right now. The first group is, hey, I get the fact why we have asset allocation. I get the fact that the markets are extremely volatile. I'm not going to sell, but I'm not going to buy. I'm just going to hold tight. And for that group, I am very clear with them. That's great. I respect the decision. I'm going to keep engaged with you because things will change. And at a certain point in time, as we start to become over-allocated to fixed income, we might want to trim 1 or 2% and eventually redeploy into equities. And I want to make sure that we're consistently having this discussion. With my other group of clients, they are like ready to chow down at the buffet, right? They are, okay, we have waited for this. It is opportunity. Let's go. Now that let's go attitude could be in two pieces. It could be people who say, look, as I get over allocated to fixed income, trim the positions and deploy back in. And then I've got a group who say, I've got cash on the sidelines. I want to put it to work. What is really key with these types of situations is we don't just jump in on a single day. We need to have what we call a tranching plan, or, you know, more commonly called a dollar cost average plan of how are we going to deploy cash and into what asset classes would we be best served doing it, looking at our current asset allocation. And I will tell you, it's hard to do because I have a whole team behind me who are running asset allocations constantly because literally they are changing day by day as the markets are moving and changing by a couple of percentage points in each direction. So, you know, I've got both. That's what I'm seeing my clients do. So what I would tell anyone who's managing their portfolio or who is working with an advisor is there is a very important tool that I think we should all use. And that is something called an investment policy statement. And it's something that anyone who's a fiduciary has to use when managing a client portfolio because it's the mandate for the portfolio. It confirms the client's risk tolerance, their tax situation, their current needs for cash. But on mine, we have a section called special considerations. And so right now, what my team is doing overall for all of our clients is we have all of our clients charted the dates we're touching them and their emotional reactions on each date, whether it's buy, don't buy, I want to just hold tight, I like my asset allocation, you know, we're noting it all down, but we're taking that data and we're putting it in the investment policy statements. And the reason is this is going to pass at some point. And once it passes, we all need to be able to take the data from how we emotionally reacted during this market and we have to sift through it for the next time, because I want client feedback for how we manage the portfolio. If they felt that they did the right things in the moment, what should I do differently with them next time we're in this situation? Maybe some self-reflection by them, what they could do differently, but we've got to use this moment to become better at managing our assets. So on that, I'm going to just pause right there.
No, I appreciate the insight, Megan. And I think the investment policy statement's really important to put it to paper so that people kind of remember, you know, exactly what they kind of agreed to and you're all on the same page. I know with institutions, we deal with that a lot, having an investment policy statement to keep people in line, because inevitably people's emotions take over and, you know, they make stupid decisions because we're all human. So that's just kind of a natural thing. Or in institutional cases, sometimes, you know, people on the committees change and they have different opinions. I think from an investment standpoint, from my perspective, you know, we've taken a different standpoint of this because we're not buy and hold. And so our philosophy has always been managing risk. It's always been about, you know, risk management first is really our philosophy. You know, as Warren Buffett says, rule number one is don't lose money. Rule number two is make sure you follow rule number one. So we've always kind of taken the mathematical approach of if you're not losing 50%, you know, if you lose 50%, you need to make 100% to get back to where you started. Most people don't think about that math. Making 100% is pretty hard. In this case, 30%, you know, you don't need 100%, but you need a good chunk to get back to where you started. So if you're thinking about risk management, the part of our philosophy is this, is looking at things in scenarios. Because I think what a lot of people try to do, a lot of investors, they think they can time the bottom, they can time the top, they know when the market's going to sell off, they know when this is going to happen, or they have a feeling this is going to happen. I'll clue you in, no one knows the future. That's right, I said it, big secret, big Wall Street secret. No one knows the future. And if you're trying to predict the future, you're going to be wrong. You're just guessing. So our standpoint is rather than trying to predict the future, we try to put things into scenarios. So what would we do if this scenario happened? What would we do if this scenario happened? Now, I know there are some firms that do this kind of scenario type thinking, and obviously no one had coronavirus in their scenarios. But, you know, philosophically, as you're thinking about it, you're also thinking about, well, it doesn't matter what the crisis is. It is the fact that it's a crisis and it's going to put people into a situation that they're uncomfortable in. And the result is going to be something similar. So, you know, if the market sells off 30%, 40%, 50%, what would you do? And just taking the time to think about that. Like, for instance, the market's down, I don't know what it is today, 25%. What would you do if it goes down another 25%? What would you do if it went up 25%? Like just thinking through those outcomes, what would you do if the market was flat for the next 10 years? So it's thinking through like how would you react to this and what is the best approach given the fact that you don't know the future, but you can put some boundaries around the outcomes. You can define your outcomes in some ways you can't. But certainly you can define your risks and what risks you're willing to take. You know, if you're modern portfolio theory and you're a buy and hold investor and you're allocating, then you have to expect the fact that in up and down markets, you have to buy and hold. Like that's the strategy. That's the instruction manual. If you're buying into the concept, then that's how you need to manage money. So when the market sells off, just like, you know, Megan, Barb, and Miranda said, you're buying into that. You need to hold on. You need to be comfortable and be able to sleep at night with your allocation. If you don't subscribe to that, then you have a different set of instructions. But what you need to do is make sure you understand the rules that you're taking on and stick to them, whether it's through an investment policy statement, whether it's through using an advisor, but you need to come up with rules and be able to stick with them. Because, you know, we've never seen, or anybody alive at least, most likely, has never seen the Great Depression. I mean, that was, what, 20 years basically of a flat market, 15, 20 years of a flat market. You know, you look at the 70s, the market was flat for that period of time. You look at the 2000s, it was also it went up and down a lot, but it was also ended up pretty much for 11 years from 2000 to 2010, I think it was, or 11, I have to go look it up. The market was effectively flat. You got 0% return if you put your money in the market in January of 2000. So there are times where that happens, and you need to be really mindful of the fact that you don't know the outcome, but how comfortable are you going to be with these different outcomes? And if you're not comfortable, then you need to find a solution that's going to work better given some of the potential outcomes. So that's how we look at it. I mean, I take a more of a mindset approach because I think intellectually you can't know the future and you can crunch numbers all you want, but nobody predicts the coronavirus. So all your calculations and models didn't account for this. And that's why I think scenario thinking is really effective. But Megan, I wanted to ask you, I want to volley it back to you again, because you and I are in the industry and we're hearing this from a lot of different people. What kind of questions are you hearing from your clients? Like, what are the most common questions and what are the most common concerns you're hearing?
So interestingly, you know, a lot of my clients, excuse me, I'm losing my voice. a lot of my clients are corporate executives, which is sort of interesting as this is going on, because they're all working 16, 17 hour days, right? Because they are working on their own companies. So, you know, most of the insight I'm getting from them is that a lot of them who are, you know, involved in the business community do feel that the underlying fundamentals of the US economy are there. It's just we're stuck in a very challenging situation. So I'm not getting as much question. The big question that a lot of them ask me is, what are the other clients doing? So they want to know what other people in their situation are doing. Are they buying? Are they holding? You know, the clients tend to know that not to sell in this type of situation, but they're very curious about others' behavior. In terms of, you know, other questions, you know, typically I have a running story going with them of what's going on, what we're hearing. So it's a little bit of banter back and forth on that. But remember, everybody has sort of gotten a lot of news right now. So everybody's pretty up to date. So it's a bit more of sifting through and making sure they're hearing key facts and not getting caught up in the noise. And to be candid, the other thing that people do bring up a lot is the concern about the deficit. You know, every lever has been pulled. I can tell you as a tax person, you know, as we're going through all these tax trainings and reading the bill, it's unbelievable the levers that have been pulled to put money into the system. And so I think there's a longer term concern of where do we go from here as a country?
Yeah, that's actually great insight. I've not been getting the question of what are other people doing. So that's actually interesting. I know that what I've been seeing is a lot of people are there. I mean, I saw this in 2008 too, where people were watching the news and they immediately thought that impacted them. So they didn't have really a full concept of what their portfolio was doing. Like I remember in 2008, I had a client who called in October and said, "Oh, the market's down a lot. Should we take the money out?" I told her, I said, "You've been in cash for like the last year. You've been in CDs. What do you..." Like what? And she's like, "Oh, okay. What are my CDs making me?" It's like you're obviously not paying attention. That should not be your concern. I'm worried about the banks failing. I'm not worried about what we're making in money. And so I think there's a disconnect out there in terms of what people are hearing and what's going on. I know for the first 2 weeks of the sell-off, people were in denial. I would call them up and say, "Hey, everything's going fine. And you know, we have your risk managed and all that." But what I was getting back was, "Oh, it doesn't matter. The market's going to come back." And I think it's not until this week where I've really started to hear, you know, people are out of the denial stage where they're realizing like this might last longer. Cause I know, Miranda, you've got a son, and Megan, do you have kids?
Nope.
Okay.
Child free.
Okay. So we are struggling with homeschooling our children, and you know, they told us that, "Oh, we're going to be out for a week." Okay. Then it turned into two, then it turned into four. Now it's May, and next week it'll be the end of the year. And then they're already talking about summer camps being canceled, and it's just a mess. And the unknown is really scary. And when you start to think about it, like, what are we going to do with our children? Like, we had all of this lined up so that we can both work and give them something fun to do. And, you know, it's kind of like dual role childcare slash fun. But, you know, we're giving them something to do and we have to work. Like, what's this going to look like 3 or 4 months from now? How are we going to deal with this? So I think we're starting to get the anger out there where people are getting really obviously angry at everything that's going on. Like, these schools aren't doing enough, or, you know, why are they, you know, these local community clubs or organizations that do the sports, like, how can they charge us? We're not even doing spring baseball because, you know, because we're not allowed to. How are they able to? I mean, just really, really angry people out there. And that concerns me, and just the anger out there, and, you know, what's going to happen when people really boil over because they're stuck at home and they're not allowed to do the things they want to do, and life isn't turning out how they want to turn out. So I think the denial I've seen a lot from people, they're just ignoring it. They're saying it'll come back, it'll go away. And this is a normal psychological thing that I've seen in 2008. It's happening now, and I expect it's just normal. That when people go into this crisis mode, they shut down, they just don't react. And they react sometimes in a contrary way to the way they should, which is they sell their portfolio. People who are thinking rationally would buy into this sell-off. Not sure that's always the best scenario, but the fact they're thinking properly. And other people just ignore it. They just ignore that this has even happened and just assume it'll come back. So I think that's kind of the sentiment I'm getting. It's an interesting insight into human nature. And for all listeners here who are hearing this, just think about where you fall in that spectrum. Like, are you just ignoring this? Are you actively looking for opportunities? Or are you freaking out and selling? And I think that's how you need to kind of look at this, is like, if you're freaking out and selling, or if you're ignoring it, then, you know, maybe you need to relook at your portfolio and find something that's more suitable for you, that fits your kind of investment style.
Yeah. And I just kind of like to add, I have two online friends who have some really great resources. The first is Aaron Lowry from Broke Millennial. And hopefully we can include these in our show notes. But Aaron Lowry from Broke Millennial has a great resource. It's a Google sheet that's viewable by the public. But it's, if you look at the tabs at the bottom, it's not just about, like, she's got stuff for business, small business, for financial help, all of that kind of stuff. But she also has, you know, here are some mental health resources. Here are some places you can go for fitness. Here, you know, for fitness resources. Like, for instance, my gym is giving us all access to on-demand fitness classes. So, you know, just little things like that. So I think this is a great resource, because if you are struggling with some mental health issues, my health insurance company doesn't usually cover telehealth, but now they are. And so I actually am going to have an appointment with my counselor via telehealth. So there are all of these things, like you said, Kirk, that people are kind of struggling with right now, but there are some resources that can kind of help you through this. So I really encourage people to check out Aaron's resources at Broke Millennial. And again, we'll try and get that, hopefully, maybe, fingers crossed, in the show notes. And then also another great one for financial, if you're having financial issues, if you want more information about what are the resources for financial help and financial issues, Jacob Wade from iHeart Budgets has collected a bunch of resources together. So these are hubs that you can go to and just find they're really well organized. You can find resources to help you with these issues.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. We'll put that in the show notes, Miranda. Thanks for bringing that up. I want to end off with one final point, because as of this, when we're recording this, Congress just passed the CARES Act last Friday, and there's a ton of stuff in there. And we're probably going to have a separate episode to talk about all of the details here. So I think we're going to interview somebody in 2 days about this, because it's really important to dig into this. So Barb, what about you? Have you, you know, from, do you think this CARES Act kind of does enough to help people, or how do you think this is going to impact people? What are your favorite parts of the CARES Act?
Well, I think it's a Band-Aid, and I love that I love that the government is taking action quickly. I also have a bifurcated concern about what this is going to do to the deficit, which will ultimately increase our obligation, financial obligation as well. And we're actually taking on more debt with that. But that wasn't the question you asked me. So yes, I think it's really good that people are getting a check, that there are a lot of both local and federal cushions for individuals. There's a wonderful article that we will include in the show notes that is an FAQ, frequently asked questions by the New York Times discussing what you can expect. So I think it's good, but we cannot depend on the government to bail us out. We've got to help ourselves as well. And if that means taking on being creative in ways that you can figure out how to make more money now. So actually, people are hiring a lot of delivery drivers, and a lot of people are being hired at warehouses and that kind of thing. So you might want to think, if you're in a low risk category and you have proper health equipment, that you might want to also look out for ways yourself to make more money and help yourself get through this time selling your stuff on eBay. A lot of other things, in addition to taking the government help, that you can do to figure out ways to get yourself through this tough time.
Yeah, thanks, Barb. That's really important, is thinking about all these different resources. Megan, what about you? What are your thoughts on the CARES Act? I know you have an accounting background.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is complicated. It's moving fast. It's changing fast. You know, I've been going through tax trainings, and, you know, we're all trying to get through over 800 pages of new legislation and understand what it means for our clients. So the best piece of advice that I could give anyone at this time is, if you're impacted and you're unsure what to do, or even if you think you know what you're supposed to be doing, this is when you want to be engaged with your CPA or tax professional. And that is because we understand your individual situations, and we can sort of help walk through the decisions you need to make. And we're also the ones, now that they've moved the April 15th deadline to July 15th, we have the time to be holding your hand and walking you through these decisions. There's a lot of great stuff in the CARES Act. The fact that they've addressed self-employed individuals excites me a lot. The fact that they're going to help people really try to get through this is a good thing. But we all need handholding. And the one thing I often hear all the time is, I don't want to call my CPA. He charges me by the hour. Look, this is money well spent, because some of this stuff has nuance. Some of this stuff can come back and bite you if you don't do it the right way. So this is really a very important time to engage with your CPA or tax professional. I will also tell anyone who believes that they will be eligible for the Stimulus Act should try to file their 2019 tax return as soon as possible. We are getting different information from Treasury every day. Initially, they said, don't worry if you haven't filed your 19 return or if you haven't been a filer of a tax return. Now they're telling us that they want you to file. So look, as different information's out there, it may just be the best thing to file your 2019 tax return. And keep in mind that for a lot of US taxpayers, the IRS offers free tools. Drives me crazy when I see these ads from tax preparation companies saying that they will be cheaper than the competitor on filing the tax return. No one is cheaper than the IRS for most Americans. So feel free to use the free file program or reach out to programs like VITA, Voluntary Income Tax Assistance Programs, because these are great people who can help you.
Yeah, those are great points, Megan. I mean, all the free resources out there are great. I think one of the challenges that people have, obviously, is figuring it out. I mean, this CARES Act is great. And actually, one follow-up point before I go to Miranda. One of the things the CARES Act does is gives out money to everybody who's a taxpayer. I think it's $1,200 per adult and $500 per child. And then there's a phase out if you make too much. However, one thing that comes up is, they're going based on the address of your last tax return. So if you've moved in the last year, they're not going to know you moved. So if you really want to make sure you get your checks, now it may take them 6 months to get the checks out. Who knows? I don't know what they put in for their own deadlines. But either way, the checks aren't coming out tomorrow. So if it takes them 3 months to get the checks out, make sure you go in and file. I think it's Megan probably knows this. There's a form you can file to update your address. I think it's form.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the form. You can go in and update your address.
8822.
Yep.
So Form 8822 to update your address.
It's also worth noting, though, that they are going, like, if they have your bank account information on file, like if you have it set up for like automatic deposit for your tax refund or automatic withdrawal for your tax payments, if they have your bank account on file, they'll just put it in your bank.
Yeah,
account.
And 93 million U.S. taxpayers who receive refunds do direct deposit.
Yeah.
However, we were told yesterday
this
is not bad. This is actually good. After you get your payment, you will get a postcard in the mail saying you have received a payment. If you did not get the payment, you need to call the number. So they are trying to have some checks and balances in the system. But again, Treasury is trying to do this in 3 weeks. So we will see how well they are able to execute on this in such a short period of time.
But if you do have a bank account on file, then it'll come to your bank account and not as a check.
Yeah. And I think it's great that they have those checks and balances, but if they're sending you a check and then they send you a postcard, if you didn't get one, you're probably not getting the other. So
it's important because what everyone has to remember, this sounds really weird. We keep talking about the 2018, 2019 return, but really this is an advanced payment from your 2020 income tax return. So there will be a reconciliation that will be done on your 2020 income tax return.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's also going to be important for tax filings in 2020 when we do what's called a true up.
But it's in your favor if they send you more money than you should get, it'll actually be in your favor. They won't claw it back. So
No.
That's they were clear on that. Did that change in the last few days?
I'm looking at the regs right now. I can follow up in the show notes on that.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. So one point here, just for listeners, this literally changing by the day. So whatever we say here in 2 days could be different because they're actually, although they've written the law, the implementation is still being written by the IRS and by the SBA. So just keep in mind that if you hear the information early, right after it comes out, it's probably not accurate because they're constantly updating this. So just FYI.
And Kirk, I believe what you're referencing is right now, the way it's stated is if the advance payment is more than the actual credit that taxpayer is entitled to on the 2020 return, there is no mechanism for taxpayer to either one, report the excess, or two, to repay the excess. So that is the law as it stands today on April 1st. Let's see if Treasury clarifies by regulation.
Yeah, meaning, hey, we want our money back. We'll see.
Correct.
And I don't want to go down too many rabbit holes because we'll come talk about the CARE Act in a different episode. But there's a lot of gems in there for business owners as well. And really, everybody, there's something in there for everybody. So, you know, talk to your tax preparer. If you are a business owner, make sure you talk to your tax preparer. Or if you need help, you know, certainly reach out to somebody who knows what they're talking about, because there's a lot of stuff in there that we've been talking to clients about and trying to make sure that they get access to the money that is pretty much being given out. Like, you know, I mean, it's the easiest package that everybody's had as business owners to actually get access to this money. It's been really interesting kind of working with different professionals and seeing how this SBA portion is being implemented. So let's get kind of the final thoughts here as we wrap up. Miranda, what are your final thoughts or things that we haven't kind of covered that you think we should have?
I mean, oh gosh. I mean, I really think that, like, at this time, if you're financially stressed, if you are running out of, you know, if you've been laid off, if your hours are cut, if your income is being affected, definitely check out some of those resources that I mentioned before that are going to be in the show notes. And realize too that, yes, there are some good things in this CARES Act. This one-time payment might help you cover part of your rent for 1 month, which can be helpful. Yes, if you get unemployment benefits, the CARES Act adds extra weekly amounts to your weekly unemployment benefit check. However, the downside to that is it might induce more companies to lay people off. The other downside to that is that even with the extra unemployment, eventually it'll run out and you'll have to go back to trying to figure out where you fit in to, depending on how long this lasts, the entire face of what we consider work might be changed. If the small business you were working for goes completely out of business, you won't be able to come back to work once your unemployment benefits run out. And then the other thing you have to look at is what your state does for unemployment, because the CARES Act does allow for these extra unemployment benefits. But if your state is not what's called a work share, does not have what's, what's called a work share, if your hours are severely cut, but you're not laid off, you still can't apply. It depends on where your state is and how their program works. Like in my, like there are states where if you have your hours cut severely to under a certain amount, you can still claim unemployment benefits, which can be helpful because you're not laid off, but you can still get help for your income. The state I live in does not allow for that. You have to be completely laid off. So you're also going to have to look and see what you have access to through your state. So it's all very confusing. And it's all very frustrating in some cases. And I think what Barb said about it being a Band-Aid is definitely the truth, especially when you look at the fact that, you know, especially like in 2008, and we talk about the deficit and we talk about, you know, what we're going to pay for. If you look at all of this stuff, we always have $1 trillion to give a tax cut to businesses. We always have $2 trillion to give special loans to banks. And we always have billions of dollars to bail out whatever industry we think should be bailed out. So, you know, we also need to start thinking about, do we have that same amount of money to put into our company, to our country's infrastructure? Are we willing to put that same amount of money into the people who are actually on the ground and will spend that money? And now I will get off my soapbox, but these are things we need to think about.
Thanks a lot, Miranda. Where can people find more about you?
I don't know if I want to share that now.
Which soapbox? You can find Miranda on the soapbox.
That's right. MirandaMarquette.com. I'm always there ranting about something.
Thanks a lot, Miranda. Barb, what about you? Final thoughts?
Well, I think all of our panelists gave some really good technical and specific information. I would like to offer some more broad recommendations, which would be, I know this is a really, really, really scary time. And for some of you, you're facing what look like insurmountable financial hurdles. But in spite of that, there is some help coming from the government. And what you can do is do not put your head in the sand. Take a look at your entire financial picture right now and make a plan. If you've got a lot of debt, write your creditors now and tell them what you're going through and ask them for a delay in making your payments. Be honest with everyone that you owe money to. Also, look at your own lifestyle and take control of what you can control. So make the adjustments within your family to cut back as much as you can, to enjoy the time, the extra time that you have with your kids and your loved ones. There's a flip side to this tragedy as well. So take a long-term view, try and make the best of it, and take practical steps to deal with the financial and mental realities that we're undergoing right now. My name is Barbara Friedberg. You can reach me at RoboAdvisor Pros or Barbara Friedberg Personal Finance. Please be safe and realize that this too will pass.
Thanks a lot, Barb. Appreciate your words of wisdom there. And then finally, Megan, final thoughts for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think Miranda and Barb brought up a lot of great points. I think this is a challenging time, and I think people need to remember this is going to be a process at how the government tries to provide help. The good news is they're doing everything they possibly can to try to help. But, you know, what I think about, and I was thinking about when I read the CARES Act for the first time, is a lot of this is coming through Treasury. A lot of this is going to come through the tax code. And so the best way to sometimes get help is to get help on tax. I know I say that a lot, but, you know, understanding, having someone who can advocate for you through the system and help you go through all of the rules to get you what you need can be key. And people want to help during this time period. So reach out. And then I think for those who are lucky enough to be thinking about their portfolios, stay invested. If you are able to swallow your fear, deploy, this is a great opportunity. But it's going to be something you have to think about in conjunction with who you are in the long term, because over the next couple of months, it's going to be ugly. And you just have to understand that regarding your portfolio. So don't look at statements. If you have questions, you can email me at Megan@thewealthintersection.com. On Instagram, I've done a couple Insta stories on the new tax bill as we've been getting information and been answering questions. So you could follow me there at The Wealth Intersection. But feel free to send questions. Happy to help or point you in the right direction. Thanks for having me, Kirk.
Thanks for coming on, Megan. I appreciate you all coming on the show. I know this is a trying time for everybody, and a lot of people are struggling, whether it's financially or emotionally or you know, so many different aspects. I think now is the time to look at this crisis as opportunity, an opportunity to make some changes in your own life, to appreciate what you actually have, to help other people, to be a leader in your community. Like all of these, turn this, I hate to say turn the frown upside down, but like turn this from a situation of crisis into opportunity. And I think what you'll find is if you look at it differently, you'll be able to treat your situation differently. You're not going to be looking at it as a victim of this crisis. You're going to be looking at it as, you know, how can I make the most of this? How can I help other people? How can I put myself in a position so that when things do turn around, I'm going to be in a much better place? And it's going to be hard. We're all struggling for different reasons. And, you know, I think a lot of parents out there are stuck at home, homeschooling their kids, trying to work, and they have no childcare because you can't bring anybody in the house. And there are people out there who are older who can't leave the house because, you know, in fear of the virus. So I think we're all struggling in different ways. And what's really most important is just keeping a clear head, just being mindful of how you're feeling and understanding that that this will get better. And it may be tomorrow, it may be next week or next month, but things will get better. And, just be mindful of the fact that the markets also may take some time to come back. But if you're really focused on your investments and you're looking at it from, you know, different scenarios, and if you're comfortable, if you're able to sleep at night with your portfolio, regardless of what happens, all these things are really important. But regardless, either way, there's a lot of stuff that's come out with the CARES Act. It's really complicated. Not all of it is. There's some good resources out there, but the fact that it changes all the time makes it more complicated and confusing. So find somebody who knows what they're talking about with the CARES Act, somebody who follows it, talk to your local accountant, do what you need to do to help you get into a strong financial position so you're able to weather the storm here. So that's it this week for the show. We're going to be talking about more about this topic, about the CARES Act, about some other issues, because I don't suspect this crisis is going to go away tomorrow. So we'll keep talking about it in the show and just help people through this. So please send in your questions. If you have questions on the show about certain topics, please send them in to contact@moneytreepodcast.com and just send in your comments, and we'll be happy to talk about that and other things on the show. So my name is Kirk Chisholm. I'm a wealth manager at Innovative Advisor Group. We don't just manage your wealth, we make your life better. You can find more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me on social media everywhere. And of course, you can always find me here every week on the show. So that's the show for this week. Thank you for joining us on Money Tree Investing Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also check out our show at moneytreepodcast.com. On our website, we'll have access to some of the resources and show notes. We mentioned a few of them here on the show today. We'll put those in the show notes, so please check that out for access to all the resources and links, as well as you'll find archive shows as well. And also, please leave us a show rating and comments on the podcast app of your choice. It'll help us get access to some of the top guests. There's some great guests out there about some of these topics, and we really want to get them on the show, so your comments on that app will actually help us get more guests. So have a great week ahead, and remember, no one will care about your money like you do, so invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.